Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
They put it on us. Put on us real good. Started with the transition buckets. I think they had 34 in the first half, and obviously you can't recover from that. So they played a hell of a game, and they clicking on all facets of the game.
Well, I mean, they got off to a good lead in the first game on Christmas, and we got some timely stops in the fourth quarter. Kyrie got going, and you know we was able to get back into that game. It's a dangerous team. They got so many different options, so many guys that can not only create for themselves, but they do a great job of having guys that can create for others. You know, so it always keeps your defense off balance. I think his shoulder hit me in the face, but it happened so fast, I didn't even know who it was. I'm all right. I'm a football player.
You know, they were hungry, you know, energy, enthused, especially to start out the game. Converted on a lot of our turnovers, a lot of our mistakes, and it's a good ball club. So they did what they were supposed to do. You know, right from the start, they jumped on us and never looked back. You got to give a few more years to legit call it a rivalry. I mean, hopefully these two teams can, you know, our two teams can stick together and we could call it a rivalry over the course of a few years. But, I mean, both teams changed so much since the three-year span that we've been playing against one another.
I mean, they beat us. I mean, they won one game. I mean, they won. And well, yeah, we're going to shake it out. We got to. We got 40 more games left. I mean, I didn't think it was coming like this. You know, they play well. Give them credit. That's what champions do. You know, they lost four in a row, five out of six. They play like a team with their back against the wall. They sit here, waited on us, and they punished us.
I think all that stuff is overplayed. They beat us last year. They earned it prior to them winning their three in a row last year. We had won six, seven in a row against them. And, you know, it's just the nature of the game. You get two great teams and they're playing each other over and over again. You're going to have some swings in momentum, some streaks or whatever. You know, we beat them in Cleveland in January by a lot and everybody counted them out and said we were in their heads and they won the whole thing.
LeBron said this week that he doesn't think this is a rivalry, but given what's happened...
Yeah, I think it's a rivalry. Yeah. Just me, though.
It's definitely fun. You know, a team that you beat, that's beat you, you look at the last 2 years and this year. We've been top two teams in the league each year.
I look at it as a rivalry, and it's definitely a fun game to play in. I don't really care if anyone else see the game the way I see it. Regardless if LeBron thinks it's a rivalry or not, I know he want to beat us, and we want to beat them.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza right here. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, as the man said, is who we are. Appreciate you being a part of it. We are Toledo's sports leader. That's what we are, and we appreciate every minute you can spend with us. If you can spend the next 5-10 minutes listening to us or communicating with us, great. If you can spend the next 2 hours, that's even better. But we just love that you're a part of the show, and we want you to be a more personal part of it. Each and every opportunity you get by dialing 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Let's get you up and on the radio. If you would like to tweet to us, you can do so at Sports Radio 106.5. If you want a Facebook comment on some of the things that are going on in the news in the world of sports, you can do that at 106.5 The Ticket. That's our Facebook handle. So we would love to have you be a part of the conversation today. You just heard a whole lot of stuff in the montage from last night's rematch, if you will, of the NBA Finals from each of the last 2 years. More recently, it's a rematch from Christmas Day in Cleveland, Ohio, a little bit to our east, as the Cavaliers took the measure of the Warriors on national television. That day, Warriors had a little bit of a different plan in mind last night. Back at their building in Oracle Arena, they took it to the Cavaliers. We will talk about that coming up at about 3:35 with Rick Noland of he's a Cleveland Cavaliers beat writer, I guess I should say, just of the NBA press. He'll be joining us to talk about the impact of that game, if there is one at all, including the subject of whether or not, and you just heard Draymond Green talking about it a little bit, at the very end of that, you heard from LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Tyronn Lue, Steve Kerr, and Draymond Green about whether or not it's a real rivalry. LeBron James says, no, it's not a rivalry. They're just the best team in basketball. We're the defending champions, but we won't play them very often, so it's not a rivalry. That's what he says. You agree with that? We'll talk about it coming up with Rick at about 3:35. But I want to start the show today with Mike Tomlin's press conference. Mike Tomlin, head coach of the Steelers. I want to go back to this a little bit. yesterday, as we know, we became aware really Sunday night, after the game, after the primetime matchup between the Steelers and the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC divisional round for a right to play in this week's AFC championship game in Foxborough, Massachusetts against the Patriots. And we saw what happened. Antonio Brown turned on his little cell phone, his smartphone, started Facebook live streaming to the world what was going on inside the Steelers locker room. Now, I heard from a few different sources today, not sources, it wasn't private, but I heard a few different places today that Kansas City is really one of the only cities or one of the only stadiums whose locker rooms are kind of cordoned off like that by, you know, small sections. They're partitioned off by rows of lockers. Most NFL locker rooms are full open locker rooms where the lockers are all on walls, you know, on the main walls, and it's just an open area in the middle. If that was the case, the odds are very, very good. What happened with Antonio Brown live streaming Mike Tomlin's postgame speech, whether it was knowledgeable or without his knowledge that he did this, it wouldn't have happened. Because, you know, if you're in the wide open locker room, coach can see you. If you have a partition and a little, you know, separate section of the locker room, coach can't see you. You don't have to be listening. You can be over there screwing around with your phone and, you know, taking video of other guys who are fixing their hair in the phone and that sort of thing. And it probably wouldn't have happened that way. So from one standpoint, it was a very unfortunate thing for Antonio Brown and for the Steelers that they found themselves in a position where that could have happened. But beyond the physical, geometric, or layout of the room and the angles where you can hide from your coach while you screw around, aside from that, there is the matter of Antonio Brown doing two things. One, showing an extraordinary lack of maturity for a guy who's not a puppy anymore. Antonio Brown is not a baby. He's not a fresh-faced rookie who's coming into the league all wide-eyed and not really know what's going on. He's 28 years old. He's a grown-a man. He knows what he's doing, and at least he should know what he's doing. It's a very, very, very irresponsible and immature thing to do. But the second thing it's a blatant textbook invasion of privacy. Now, you might think to yourself, what is an invasion of privacy? An invasion of privacy is something where someone is being recorded, or in this case, live streamed, without their knowledge, when they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. If you're out on the public street, you know, on a public street, and there are businesses all around you, and many of them have surveillance cameras so that they can catch whoever it is that's breaking into their building at night, and you are caught on camera there, and you do something embarrassing, you didn't really have your privacy invaded because you have no reasonable expectation of privacy when you're in public. You understand? When you're in a locker room, though, where a whole bunch of grown men are getting butt naked, and it's... you know, close doors to the media time because you want your privacy, you physically and in all ways you expect that you are in a private moment now with just your teammates and no outside sources. You have privacy. What Antonio Brown did was an invasion of Mike Tomlin's privacy. Mike Tomlin, clearly, if he had been talking to the media or broadcasting live by way of Facebook, knowingly, would not have use the word a-holes to describe the New England Patriots. He likely wouldn't have dropped the F-bomb when he said, we're going to land at 4 o'clock in the effing morning. He likely wouldn't have said anything of the sort. He had an expectation of privacy. And Antonio Brown violated that. The question is twofold. Number one is sports-related. The other one is personally related. What I mean by that is this. From a sports standpoint, how bad of a look is this for the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers? How bad of a look would it be for Jim Caldwell? How bad of a look would it be for Hugh Jackson? How bad of a look would it be for any coach? Let's go to the NBA, for Stan Van Gundy. If Stan Van Gundy's given a big old rousing pep talk and lets a few things fly in the middle of the locker room after, let's say, a big win, and somebody is off in the corner live streaming, whether they know that the actual, you know, the phone is actually picking up, the microphone is picking up the speech or not, but then you find out later it did. What would that say about Van Gundy's or Caldwell's or who's ever control of their team and what kind of a ship they run? Because it says pretty clearly to me that Mike Tomlin runs a pretty loose ship in Pittsburgh. He does. It's not a tight ship. Tom Brady said this yesterday on WEEI in Boston. He said that what happened in Pittsburgh would not have been thought too highly of by, and he's, of course, being very, very generous with this comment, by the head coach there in New England. That, no, that would be a clear violation of our rules. Never would have happened in a Bill Belichick locker room. Never would have happened in most locker rooms, I think. But Mike Tomlin is a player's coach, and to that end, I like him. I like people who are, what's the word I want to say? I don't want to say too permissive, but I want to say they're not ultra whip-cracking disciplinarians either. Bobby Knight was that kind of a disciplinarian. Now, I have said on this radio show before, and maybe you recall, maybe you don't, it doesn't matter, so I'll say it again now, I did like Bobby Knight. I don't mind the disciplinarians either. I guess what I'm saying is what works for you is fine with me, and I like that style the way Bobby Knight did it, even though it's more old school and wouldn't fly today. It did in the 70s and 80s and 90s and early 2000s, and I loved it. But I also like Mike Tomlin a lot. But when you try to be a player's coach who runs a very loose ship and gives your guys a lot of autonomy and a lot of freedom, and then this is the way they act, it doesn't look good for you as a matter of respect that your guys don't respect your authority enough to do intelligent, make intelligent, thoughtful decisions before acting in a way that proves you a fool. And if you look at a number of different things that have happened, you know, even just in the last couple of weeks under Mike Tomlin's watch, his assistant coach Joey Porter went out after the wild card weekend win by the Steelers. He went out and ended up getting liquored up and started punching a bouncer or something like that at a club. Had some very serious charges levied against him. The Steelers kind of suspended him indefinitely. Then the charges were reduced. All but the two most minor charges were kicked out, and then he's back with the team. But Joey Porter, can you imagine a Belichick defensive coach, linebackers coach or whatever doing that? Can you imagine the most... Again, disciplinarian, it calls to mind Bobby Knight, and I don't want to keep doing that. Just more conservative-minded. The more conservative-minded coaches, can you imagine their assistant coaches or their players doing things like that? I think it speaks poorly of Mike Tomlin, and I don't want to speak poorly of Mike Tomlin because I like him, and I like that he's a player's coach, and I love how he handles press conferences. I love how he speaks. I really do. I like listening to him. He's a very direct speaker. He doesn't mince words. He's incredibly well-spoken. I like him. I want to say good things about him, and I will. But I will also say that maybe he's got to tighten the reins just a little bit in his very, very loosey-goosey type of operation. It's a loose ship, and I think maybe it needs to be tightened up a little bit because this is embarrassing. When a player does this, and I don't know too many other coaches whose players would have thought it was okay because of the loose atmosphere to live stream in a post-game locker room. The second part of that question that I mentioned was more personal, and that is, forget about taking this to other coaches in other locker rooms. I'm going to take this to you in your line of work. Where do you work? You work at Jeep? Where do you work? You make glass? You make hamburgers? You make phone calls? I don't care what kind of business you're in. Factory, restaurant, accounting office, telemarketer, I don't care. Can you imagine doing something like that, catching your boss in a private meeting on a Facebook Live thing, and then he says something derogatory about the competition, something extraordinarily embarrassing? How long would you be on that job? You'd be gone. In 2 seconds flat, right? But they can't do that. They can't even suspend Antonio Brown. Why? They're playing the freaking Patriots this weekend for a right, for the right to go to the Super Bowl. So what's Mike Tomlin have to do? What's he get to do? I don't know what he can do. You're not going to bench your best receiver. You're one of your two best, one of your three best offensive players. I don't even know how you rank Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell. They're tremendous. The best threesome at their positions in football. Probably. What are you going to do? I guess you could fine him. But you're not going to suspend him, not going to sit him down. Those were some of the questions facing Mike Tomlin today when he had his press conference, his Tuesday press conference, and he wasted no time getting right to the core of the issue.
Now I'll start with the elephant in the room. I want to talk to you about the post-game video, and I want to talk about it in really kind of three specific areas. First, the content of the video. I'd like to say that the language on the video is regrettable, language by me and by others. And it's regrettable because, man, this thing that is the National Football League, this platform that we have, is a precious and awesome thing, and not something that we take very lightly. The responsibility associated with being in this thing, you know, just from a role model standpoint, is something that I personally embrace, is something that we as a team and organization embraces. And so that's why the language specifically in terms of the content is regrettable. That's why we go to great lengths to preserve certain moments and certain interactions between us, because we are very sensitive to the opportunity that we have as role models. So I apologize for the content of the video from that perspective. As a parent, as a member of a community, I take that very seriously, and so I sincerely issue an apology in that regard.
His apology for the content, the language of that video, wasn't because of the language he used in that video. His apology was because you heard it. I'm telling you, as somebody, and I'm not telling you, I'm not breaking any sort of, you know, momentous news here when I say this, that football players swear. Every football coach probably ever swears in the locker room. And whether it's swearing about a call, whether it's swearing about a performance, whether it's swearing about an opponent, or whatever it is, they do it. He's not apologizing for the language. He's apologizing because you got a chance to hear it, which you shouldn't have. And as a parent, as he pointed out, you don't want young people to hear it, et cetera, et cetera. He apologizes for having used that language. But it's more because of the fact that a stupid idiot player broadcast it to the world. Part two, Mike Tomlin today at his press conference.
In regard to the content of the video relative to its impact on this game, or our preparation as a distraction, and New England's motivation and so forth, I have absolutely no worries regarding. We're in the AFC Championship. You're not going to creep in the back door of New England and win a football game and creep out of there with an AFC Championship. I'm not worried about our team's ability to deal with the potential distractions. We have prepared for distractions as much as we've prepared for this opportunity.
Do you start, you know, I mean, look, you're in Toledo, Ohio, you hear some of Jim Caldwell, you hear some of Hugh Jackson, and then you hear whatever national stuff you might catch on the national shows. You probably don't hear a whole lot of Mike Tomlin talking, is my point on that, right? But I want to let you hear a lot of them today so you can see what I'm talking about. Do you understand why I like this guy so much? He is a tremendous, tremendous presenter. I mean, he presents himself. He presents his team. He presents his points of view about as clearly and articulately, without any melodramatic moments, without any, you know, hemming and hawing, without any disrespect to the media like Greg Popovich does, without any of the mumbled answers like Bill Belichick does. He just addresses it. He says it clearly. He says it cleanly. He says it completely. And he leaves you no doubt whatsoever as to where he stands. By the way, that's how he got the job as the coach in Pittsburgh. If you did not know, 10 years ago, the Steelers were looking for a replacement for Bill Cowher. They were all set to hire from within. They were all set to hire maybe Russ Grimm, who was their offensive line coach. And they had another assistant who was supposed to be highly thought of as one of the potential final two candidates. They brought in Mike Tomlin in large part because of the Rooney Rule. ironically enough, named for Dan Rooney, the president of the Steelers, to try to give minorities more of an opportunity to interview for big jobs. They brought him in large part because of the Rooney Rule, and then they sat down and listened to this man speak the way you are hearing him speak right now at the press conference, and they absolutely fell in love with him and said, we can't let this guy leave without giving him the job. That's how Mike Tomlin became the head coach of the Steelers, and I have a lot of respect for his ability to communicate and articulate his points without any hemming and hawing or mumbling and bumbling like so many other coaches. Bill Belichick does, even though Bill Belichick is the greatest. I just love the way this guy presents. Part three.
I'll be bluntly honest here. It was foolish of him to do that. It was selfish for him to do that. And it was inconsiderate for him to do that. Not only is it a violation of our policy, it is a violation of league policy, both of which he knows. So there are consequences to be dealt with from his perspective. We will punish him. We won't punish us. And we'll do so swiftly, and we'll do so internally.
I love that. I love that part of this. We're not going to punish us. You know what that means, right? It means he's going to play Sunday. If we suspend him for this, it's punishing us. We will punish him, and we will do so internally.
We will punish him. We won't punish us, and we'll do so swiftly, and we'll do so internally. And I'll imagine that there are consequences associated with the National Football League's policy in that regard. Sure that he'll appropriately absorb all of those things.
So in other words, we're probably going to fine him a boatload of money, and the NFL is probably going to fine him another boatload.
He's got to grow from this. He has to. He works extremely hard. He's extremely talented. And those things get minimized with incidences such as this. You wear on your teammates when they have to routinely answer questions about things that aren't preparation or football related. It's our desire for him and everyone to be great teammates as well as great players. He's a great player. He's a hard-working player. He's respected largely in the locker room for those things. But incidences such as this, you know, don't help him in that regard, and that's just the reality of it.
I'll ask this question. Can you imagine what would be said about this situation if it was number 13 for the New York Giants instead of number 84 for the Pittsburgh Steelers doing the exact same thing? If Odell Beckham Jr. was Facebook living while Coach Ben McAdoo was talking after a win, oh my goodness. And believe me, you know I would be killing him for it. And because of that, even though I like Antonio Brown and I don't like Odell Beckham as much, I have to kill and hold Brown accountable as well. I want your thoughts on this at 866-240-1065. But coming up right after this timeout, we're going to talk NBA basketball. It was a big one at Oracle last night. It was over early. The defending champion Cavaliers blown out by the Golden State Warriors in a potential rematch of the NBA Finals. A three match, if you will. We'll talk about that with Rick Nolan coming up next on The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
They put it on us. Put on us real good. Started with the transition buckets. I think they had 34 in the first half, and obviously you can't recover from that. So they played a hell of a game, and they clicking on all facets of the game.
Cool. All right, there you go. That wasn't exactly what I expected to hear there. Did you have the Draymond cut, Jim Cushlin? That's the one I was hoping to hear.
Oh, I got that too. Hang on.
Yeah, that's the one I wanted to hear as we welcome Rick Nolan back to the program there. It's very interesting last night as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. The rematch of the Christmas Day game won in a very, very dramatic fashion by the Cavaliers out in Cleveland. The rematch last night in Oracle, no dramatics needed. It was over early, and it was a beatdown, despite the fact that it's not a rivalry, according to LeBron James. Draymond Green, I don't think necessarily agrees.
Yeah, I think it's a rivalry. So, yeah. Just me, though.
It's definitely fun. You know, a team that you beat, that's beat you, you look at the last 2 years and this year. We've been top two teams in the league each year.
I look at it as a rivalry, and it's definitely a fun game to play in. I don't really care if anyone else see the game the way I...
Well, that got cut off there. Anyway, Draymond Green obviously got into a little bit more histrionics with LeBron James, had a flagrant one. But this game was over early. Joining us now to talk about the impact of this game on the rest of the season or on the NBA Finals, if there is one at all, is our good friend Rick Nolan, who is an NBA beat writer covering the Cleveland Cavaliers. Rick, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. I'm not sure how much time we can fill talking about that game last night, but we'll give it a shot.
Why don't we start there? Long before they played, I think it was at least 2 days. I think he made the statement on Sunday, or maybe it was yesterday. I'm sorry, they played yesterday. Maybe it was Saturday. But LeBron James, I had seen quoted as saying, I don't see this as a rivalry, despite the fact that they had played the last two NBA finals against one another. He's essentially saying, look, you know, they're way out there. We're over here. We only see each other twice a year. How can it really be a rivalry? Draymond Green said, bull crap. Of course it's a rivalry. What do you say?
Yeah. I strongly agree with Draymond. I think the fact that they only see themselves twice a year makes it even more of a rivalry, because they won't meet again until the finals. We both know that the same team hasn't made it in the finals 3 years in a row, and they're on the verge of doing that. Of course it's a rivalry. It's a huge rivalry. The outcome of the regular season games don't mean a whole heck of a lot, but it's still a rivalry. And if you don't think the Golden State Warriors really wanted to win that game last night, then you're watching a different game than I was. I think they knew that they had to win that one or their psyche. And if they had lost, they'd have downplayed it and said, oh, it's not a rivalry. It's just one of 82 and we'll be fine in June. But of course it means a lot. I mean, the eyes of the NBA were on that game at least for about a quarter last night, and then everybody went about their business once it was determined that the Cavs had already checked out of that road trip and started heading back mentally to Northeast Ohio.
So, when you say, of course, it means a lot, to whom? I guess clearly Golden State, as you pointed out, because they had lost four in a row to the Cavs, counting the three finals games when they blew their 3-1 lead and then Christmas Day. So I guess it means a lot to them, but does it mean anything at all to the Cavs, given that, and this is the irony of it, of course, last year the blowout loss to the Warriors happened also on Martin Luther King Day, and it didn't seem to matter in the NBA Finals as the Cavaliers ended up with a championship. So is it possible that it could mean a lot to one side and not mean squat to the other?
Yeah, absolutely, especially in Golden State's, you know, condition when you win 73 games and you're up 3-1 and you beat the brains out of the team twice during the regular season and you don't win the finals. It probably means more to you, being that you've lost to that same team four times in a row. It looks like the tables may have turned a little bit, but, I get your point on who does it mean a lot to, because I think it means a lot more to you and I and everyone else as fans than it does, you know, and this is probably an unfortunate thing in sports today, than it does to most of the guys that are playing it. They can shake hands and go out to dinner and continue on being friends, you know, 45 minutes after that game ends. Fans have a harder time, meeting of the minds and getting along after a game than players do. They're done with it when they walk off the court, for the most part. But that's just, I think, more of the era and the age we live in with pro sports.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Let's talk a little bit about this rivalry thing a little bit more. It certainly can be more than just one of 82 and yet not still be, you know, something that's going to live with
right.
you for a week or longer. I mean,
right.
I'm quite certain that, you know, they didn't like being blown out, but probably by the time they get, where are they going next, by the way? I didn't even look at the schedule. What are they on the way back home yet, or they have another one out there?
Yeah, Cavs are home here Thursday and Saturday.
So that was the last one of a long trip and not a particularly good trip for the Cavaliers on the West Coast. But I got to feel like by the time they landed, you know, this is out of their mind because they know, again, they got blown out last year and they've been blown out before, and it still doesn't really mean a whole, you know, hill of beans when you get together with these teams playing your best. Because if they see Golden State again, Rick, they're not going to be thinking about, remember when Golden State blew us out? They're going to be thinking about the last playoff series they just won in the Eastern Conference Finals and the series before that and the opening round series. And the momentum built from getting to the finals is going to be what matters, not something that happened back in January.
Right, but then unfortunately, you know, now we are in the middle of January, and the only thing we had to base things on is what's happened from then till now. The next time these teams meet, we're going to have a whole different set of criteria to base, you know, who we think is going to win, why they're going to win, because of, you know, another half a season and 20 playoff games will have transpired by then. So I don't think either of these teams, I mean, Golden State looked pretty good last night, and they're 35-6, so obviously they're not chopped liver. I think the Cavs have, you know, are right there with them. I think the danger, what I saw last night, Bob, and it doesn't matter because it was only one of 82, but it was a team that didn't really feel like it had to go out there and prove itself to Golden State, to the fans, to anybody. It was a team that was playing the sixth game of a trip and went through the motions for a few minutes and then said, we don't have it tonight. We'll regroup and get the next one Thursday. I didn't think it was a particularly good look for the Cavs in the way they competed, but, you know, they win the next four or five games in a row and it's quickly forgotten. Everything's well in the world and what we're looking ahead till April, May, and June again.
Rick Noldens is our guest talking about the NBA and the Cavaliers and the big win, or big loss, I should say, last night to the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry had a lot to prove last night. He has not played well. In fact, in the last four games that they lost to the Cavaliers, counting again the last three of the NBA Finals, he had more turnovers than he had assists. He was not himself. I don't know if it's the Cavaliers' defense. I don't know if it's his having to defend Kyrie Irving at times, even though Klay Thompson takes him at times, or what it was. But he was not able to do the things he had been able to do to the rest of the league. Last night, he was feeling it, and he was feeling it early, and he needed to be. What do you think they did differently to make it right for him?
Well, did you think that at least, especially for the first quarter and a half, when the outcome was being determined, did you sense that Steph took a little mustard off the hot dog last night?
I think so. I think I do.
That's the impression I got. I liked the Steph that I saw play last night because it wasn't glitz, glamour, and extracurriculars. The fancy things he did were done with a purpose, and I just, as a person who sometimes yells at the TV still at the age of 55, I found myself yelling at him less last night, much less. As a fan of basketball, I really enjoyed the way he played last night. I thought the behind the back dribbles had a purpose. They weren't just done to be done. There wasn't a reason to pull up from 14 feet behind the line. I thought everything he did was thought out. 10 points, 10 assists.
Although he did that about their fourth trip down the court in the first quarter.
Yeah, he had a quick one. Yeah, when they probably should have already been winning by 17 points, actually, too, it felt like. I mean, that game was 9-4, Bob, at the first TV timeout, I think.
Yep.
And it was already over in my mind.
I agree.
I tweeted right then, the Cavs should be down 15, and they will be shortly.
The moment Irving picked up his second foul and had to come out, you know, a few minutes in the first quarter, it was pretty obvious, okay, this isn't going to go well. And you know what it did also, Rick? It underscored the need, and I don't want to get too far off into the other issues right now, but it underscores the need for them to find a quality, competent, you know, backup point guard. You know,
it's
really amazing to me how much you miss Matthew Dellavedova when Matthew Dellavedova is not around. You know, a lot of people kind of... I don't want to say didn't like it because his story was so different, but boy, oh boy, he was maybe more valuable than maybe some of the fans, you know, realized.
Absolutely, and we've talked about this several times already, that problem is most glaring when either LeBron or Kyrie has to be on the bench for a big chunk of time, and that's what happened last night. And then we also saw, too, that, LeBron and Kyrie is great of strides as they've made in moving the basketball and not resorting to hero ball. There was a span of about five or six straight possessions last night where if they didn't dribble the ball anymore, the air would have went out of it right there on the court. They were going to dribble until they shot, and it didn't matter what the other nine people on the floor were doing. They were in ISO mode, and that didn't play out well for them either. So, yeah. They need a veteran point guard. They need to remind themselves that, like Steph, the great plays happen when you're playing the game the right way. They don't happen because you're trying to make great plays. And at times it seemed like that's what they were trying to do last night.
Rick, the four-game winning streak that I mentioned that the Cavaliers had going over Golden State included the three from the finals. And, of course, those three were pre-KD. Only one win was with Kevin Durant being a part of this new-look Warriors team, and that was, of course, a very close game that ended controversially, according to some, anyway, who thought maybe that Shump pushed KD on that game-winning play or potential game-winning play. But either way, KD, I think, had 36 in that game. He is such a difference-maker. Now that we have seen them at their best with KD, and now having what are we in almost 3 months into the complete months into the season, and they're really hitting their stride, and they have their chemistry. They're scary good. They are scary good.
They are very good.
Look at that yesterday, and combine it even with the Cavs' close win on Christmas Day. I would say that the Warriors are a better team, and that would be the favorite to win a seven game series in the finals.
Do you agree?
Okay, and how big is that gap in your mind now that this is a KD-led or accompanied Warriors team?
Well, here's the thing. Nobody in Northeast Ohio wanted to hear this the day after Christmas, so I saved my breath and didn't even say it. But for 42 of the 48 minutes of that game Christmas Day, Golden State was actually a significantly better team than the Cavs on that day as well. Had you cut the film off, after three quarters, you'd have been convinced then that Golden State was better than Cleveland, that the outcome that a guy made a fadeaway or jumper to win a game instead of lose it shouldn't change the way you view the talent of the teams objectively all that much. I'm not saying Cleveland can't win it, and I still like their chances because of the same reason I always have. They play in the East, and they have a really good chance of getting there. And if you get there, you have a really good chance of winning it. But I just think that Golden State's margin for error is so much bigger because they have four legitimate superstars, four all-stars on their team. They can afford for one of them to be a little bit off. What we saw last night is, if Kyrie, LeBron, and Kevin Love aren't at the top of their game together, the Cavs don't have nearly the weapons, nearly the firepower. Those are the guys that are going to have to lead the charge, and they're going to have to do it, four times in seven games when and if and when these teams meet in the finals. I've always liked Golden State's team. They score with such ease, and even when they were up 20 last night early in the second quarter, you felt like they could have been up 40. They could have played even better, it seemed like. Now, the Cavs were just god-awful. They couldn't throw it in the ocean. They couldn't get an assist because they couldn't make a shot. But I don't think it's any reason to panic here in Northeast Ohio. I think it just drives home the couple small areas of your team that you've known all along need improving, and that you're running a big gamble if you don't improve them before these teams meet and somebody has to win four times.
I want to talk more about how that margin for error. I'm sorry. Jim Cushlin is waving his arm over there, and I keep forgetting that it's waving. Cush has got a question for you, and I've got so many to follow up on what you say. I've been in neglecting. Jimmy, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem, because this will kind of be a quick one. You guys were kind of elaborating on it when the big three aren't producing, shot-making. These things happen. Kyrie Irving, you mentioned him going to the bench early while it was still somewhat decidable with that second foul. Another guy who left early was Kevin Love. Back issue, what's his status going forward?
Everything I've read and heard since then is it's not serious, and they expect him to play Thursday. So that was a curious exit there because it didn't seem like he went out. All right, we're already behind 18. Let's do the safe rather than sorry mode on this one. We're probably not going to pull this one out anyway. I was actually even surprised to see LeBron playing with 8-9 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
I thought it
was another great chance to just sit him down and say, hey, the trip's over. We'll go back and start over, Thursday. There was absolutely nothing that was going to be gained by anything that happened on that floor in the fourth quarter.
I agree, by the way, and that's a good question, Jimmy, on the Love. Thanks for catching that. I kind of forgot to ask about that. But I want to go back to what you said about margin for error, and that's what makes Golden State so much more dangerous. They can afford to have one or two of their guys off because they have just guys who have carried teams to wins, almost single-handedly in the other guy's absence of their strongest games. And the Cavs don't really have that, and I want to bring that up to ask about J.R. Smith and his value to this. No disrespect to Kyle Korver yet, of course. He's still, you know, cutting his teeth with his new team.
Right.
We'll see how that fits. But we have seen so many stretches, including in the finals, where it wasn't Kyrie or Love or LeBron, the quote-unquote big three, that carried their team through stretches of stagnant basketball. It was the red-hot marksmanship of Smith. How big is it that he wasn't there for this one? Do you think it would have made a difference? And do you think it'll make, you know, as much of a difference when he comes back, assuming he's fully healthy,
right,
before we get to the playoffs and before we get to the finals, in seven
right
games? Because that I think, expands the Cavs' margin for error with their big three a little bit, having his, you know, ability to really just get on such a run that he can
right
carry you for a while.
Right. Well, first off, I don't think anything would have changed the outcome of last night's game, given end of trip, playing on the road, yada, yada, yada.
The motivation of the Warriors, as you talked about. Good point. Yeah.
They just weren't there. Golden State wanted to win that game. The Cavs thought it would be great if they could, but if not, oh well, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They need JR, and they need him a lot. Both ends of the court, actually. And just a certain amount of the chutzpah that he brings to the floor. He just, the aura about him, the confidence that he has to take any shot at any time, and space the floor. Now, the flip side of that is he wasn't playing all well before he got hurt this season. He looked at the half a step slower, and his shots weren't falling. Now, you know, is middle of March to end of March, which when he's supposed to be back, is that enough time for him to suddenly, hit the ground running and be playing at peak efficiency in the postseason? We'll have to see on that. The extreme optimist would argue that if it is, he's going to be the freshest player on the floor in May and June,
yeah,
and that's certainly not a bad thing. So we won't know until that plays out, but I agree 100%. They didn't pay him, $57 million because they didn't think he was important to their team. They know exactly how important he is. And while Kyle Korver is a nice addition, I think you saw pretty quickly last night that he's not exactly a lockdown defender. And while JR may not be all league, he is underrated in that area. And they're going to need him against a team like Golden State that has, four guys that can go for 30 points or triple doubles on any given night. So they need every weapon they can possibly have.
Iman Shumpert has more of the rep as being, the great one-on-one on the ball defender, but I think J.R.
Smith.
Yeah,
do you see that though? When you watch games, do you think of Shumpert as a great defender? Are you really watching a great defender, or is that just New York City reputation?
It's a rep. It's a rep. I think more than the reality, it's a rep. My point to saying that was, is JR doesn't have quite the same rep as Shump does on that, but
and
I think he's
better player,
as good of a defender.
Better.
And a far better offensive player, obviously.
Agree. I think, and I think the media is sometimes to blame for that. We lump players and we label them. And Shump got labeled a very good defender very early in his career by the New York City media, and the biggest reason I could see for that is because he was a lousy offensive player.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
So
maybe that's it. Here's his.
He must have been really good at
defensive end because he isn't as good on offense. So we're just going to maybe say that.
I sometimes think that's how the NBA logic works.
I would not classify him a bad defender, to be honest with you.
No, he's not bad, but he is certainly not a stopper.
He's not a lockdown guy. Very, very well said. Now, having gotten through all of that, when Smith comes back, and by the way, what are we talking? Are we talking May? Are we talking before the playoffs?
If the 12 to 14 that they originally said and they have not updated holds true, May 17th would be the exact 12-week mark of the surgery. May 31st would be the 14 weeks.
So we're into, we're into
two
the
and a half weeks
final
of
area
season.
Then?
I'm sorry. I misspoke. March, I should have said.
Well,
big
March.
Mistake.
Okay.
Big mistake
well,
on my part. March 17th, March 31st. So if he was at the latter end and missed the full 14 weeks, he'd still have 2.5 weeks of regular season.
Okay, well, that's much better. I guess I didn't realize how long ago it was. How long has it been since he had that surgery?
Yeah, it was right around Christmas.
So
math backward in my head. It was
a little less
than a month. It would have been 3 months ago 3 months back from March 17th. So that's what, December 17th?
A little more than a week before Christmas. Okay.
So,
okay. Well, that helps a little bit. I don't know why I thought it was going to be so much further out.
Yeah, and I may have said May accidentally when I was talking earlier.
Well, you did, but it might have been my fault because I think I said we're talking May or something like that. Okay.
You know, you and I we've left Michael Jordan off the Mount Rushmore of basketball on a moment of senility as well. So
yeah,
we need to correct one another whenever we can.
Trust what one of us says in some of these.
And for what it's worth, and for the record, guys, it was the Tuesday, December 20th game at Milwaukee that he went out with the original injury.
On December 20th.
Yeah, first night of those, okay. One of those back-to-backs. That's when he went out hurt.
So then he had surgery, what, just a few days after that?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so that gives us at least a ballpark, at least two and a half weeks, hopefully, if things go well. Best-case scenario, or I should say that would be worst-case scenario. If you're going to the 14 weeks,
right.
He'll at least have a couple of weeks
in the March.
Of regular season basketball left. That's good to know. Last thing, we're getting close to All-Star time. We're not there yet. Do all three of the Cavaliers'
Absolutely.
Big three make the Eastern Conference team this year?
I don't see how they can't. Do you?
No, I don't. I just, you know how that goes. It's hard. A lot of times when LeBron was down in South Beach and all three of them made it, some people wanted to leave Bosh off. It's not right, blah, blah, blah.
He was
as good as anybody else, I guess, who made it at the time. Some people just don't like the idea of three starters from one team making it.
What do you think four? What do you I don't. I think all four should make it from Golden State, too.
Including Draymond? I'd have a hard time with that without looking much more closely at the other candidates in the front court for the Western Conference.
I think he's that important to their team. I don't think the addition of Kevin Durant made him any less of a talented player, and he was a slam dunk to make it last year. I think they may get four. I really do.
You may be right. You may be right. I want to look at the rest of the candidates before I would say that. I hope that, and there's a bias here. I'm not a fan of his. Never have been. Don't like the whole thing, the kicking and stuff last year. And he's a thorn in the side of the. And I'll be honest with you, something else that bugs me is that there are still national sports writers and talk show hosts to this day, Rick, who said that if he hadn't been suspended for Game 5, the Cavaliers would have lost the series then. It would have been over in 5, and they never would have had a chance for the 6 and 7 comebacks. So, the whole Draymond drama, about the kick and everything else, to me is a little too much. But you're right. If I look at this objectively and try to wipe that out, maybe he does deserve to be there. But I got to look at the rest of the candidates.
Somebody good is going to be left off regardless, especially out west.
Yeah, they always are. But I'm glad to hear you say what you said. Kevin Love is absolutely back to the same All-Star
format. There's no doubt in my mind.
He was in Minnesota, but on a winning team now and a big contributor to this whole thing.
I will be totally shocked if the Cavs don't have three players on the East team.
Great stuff. Great NBA analysis from Rick Noland, always, and especially today. Really enjoyed it, Rick. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of the week. Hopefully we'll chat
with you
again.
All right, anytime.
You got it.
Thanks,
buddy. All right, there you go. It's 4:01, which means we're late for our top of the hour Sports Center. Let's get there now and come back. What do we have coming up in the next hour? We're going to get back to the Antonio Brown discussion. We're going to talk a little bit more about the NFC and AFC championship games. We want to get you involved as well. 866-240-1065 is the number to join us right here on The Ticket.
They put it on us. Put on us real good. Started with the transition buckets. I think they had 34 in the first half, and obviously you can't recover from that. So they played a hell of a game, and they clicking on all facets of the game.
Well, I mean, they got off to a good lead in the first game on Christmas, and we was able to finally we got some timely stops in the fourth quarter. Kyrie got going, and we was able to get back into that game. It's a dangerous team. They got so many different options, so many guys that can not only create for themselves, but they do a great job of having guys that can create for others. So it always keeps your defense off balance. I think his shoulder hit me in the face, but it happened so fast, I didn't even know who it was. I'm all right. I'm a football player.
They were hungry, energy, enthused, especially to start out the game. Converted on a lot of our turnovers, a lot of our mistakes. And it's a good ball club, so they did what they were supposed to do. From the start, they jumped on us and never looked back.
You got to give a few more years to legit call it a rivalry. I mean, hopefully these two teams can, our two teams can stick together and we could call it a rival over the course of a few years. But, I mean, both teams changed so much since the three-year span that we've been playing against one another. So.
I mean, they beat us. I mean, they won one game. I mean, they won. We're going to shake it out. We got to. We got 40 more games left. I mean, I didn't think it was coming like this. They play well. Give them credit. That's what champions do. They lost 4 in a row, 5 out of 6. They play like a team with their back against the wall. They sit here, waited on us, and they punished us.
I think
think all that stuff is overplayed. They beat us last year. They earned it prior to them winning their three in a row last year. We had won six, seven in a row against them. And, you know, it's just the nature of the game. You get two great teams and they're playing each other over and over again. You're going to have some swings of momentum, some streaks or whatever. You know, we beat them in Cleveland in January by a lot and everybody counted them out and said we were in their heads and they won the whole thing.
LeBron said this week that he doesn't think this is a rivalry, but given what's happened...
Yeah, I think it's a rivalry. Yeah. Just me, though. It's definitely fun. You know, a team that you beat, that's beat you, you look at the last 2 years and this year. We've been top two teams in the league each year. I look at it as a rivalry, and it's definitely a fun game to play in. I don't really care if anyone else see the game the way I see it. Regardless if Bron thinks it's a rivalry or not, I know he want to beat us, and we want to beat them.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, that is who we are, that is what we are, and we thank you for being a part of it right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hope you're having an outstanding Tuesday. Really, really good NBA conversation with Rick Nolan last half hour, in fact, talking about the rematch of the NBA Finals. It was the rematch of the the Christmas Day game, which was a rematch of the NBA Finals of the last years. Cavs and Warriors last night, a blowout win for the Warriors. You just heard from LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Tyronn Lue, Steve Kerr, and Draymond Green. Cavaliers are not back in action again until Thursday when they take on the Phoenix Suns back at home after a long, long road trip out west. And guess who else was on a long trip out west? The Detroit Pistons, and they're back in action tomorrow against the Atlanta Hawks, and we're looking forward to seeing if they can build a little bit upon some of the good things that they have done. I want to go back to the NFL and back to the Antonio Brown story, and I want to talk about this from a more personal perspective. First of all, let me remind those who did not hear it. This was about 47 seconds or so of Antonio Brown's live Facebook stream of what was going on in the Steelers locker room after their divisional round win on Sunday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. Mike Tomlin is in the background. You can hear the voice kind of muted a little bit, kind of faint because, well, Antonio Brown is hiding around a couple of banks of lockers, rows of lockers, screwing around with his phone, looking at how many thousands of people are following his live stream instead of listening to his head coach. And that's why you don't hear the head coach clearly, but you hear it well enough to know that he called the New England Patriots a-holes, not because they're the Patriots, but probably just because they're the next opponent. And you're going to hear some other things that we do bleep out of this audio, but this is 47 seconds that got Antonio Brown in a whole heap of trouble with this head coach.
When you get to this point in the journey, man, not a lot needs to be said.
No.
Let's say very little moving forward. Mm-hmm. Let's start our preparation. We spotted the ass a day and a half. They played yesterday. Our game got moved to tonight. We're going to touch down at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So be it. We'll be ready for the ass. But you ain't got to tell them they come to McDermott.
If you're wondering, you know, you're trying to listen to Tomlin, which is the dominant voice there. And the reason it's dominant is we tinkered with the audio the best we could to lift it so you could hear him more clearly. But in doing so, you also hear the whispers. The whispers are, of course, Antonio Brown and a couple of other knucklehead teammates, you know, looking at the phone and looking at how many thousands of people are following their little post-game locker room celebration, which is supposed to be private and off-limits to the media and to the public. That's the problem. It's not private or off-media or off-limits to the media and the public if you're broadcasting it live through the Facebook live stream. So that's what the whispering is. And again, you heard Mike Tomlin in the background saying, yeah, we spotted these a-holes, he said, but he said the full word. We bleeped out part of it. He said, we spotted these a-holes a day and a half. And you know what? He said, we're not going to touch down till 4 o'clock in the effing morning, but it doesn't matter. We're still going to get ready. So basically kind of saying, and this is an interesting part of it, too. Maybe I should hit the pause button here for a moment and talk about the use of the word a-holes. First of all, for anybody whose delicate ears are really offended by this, what do you expect? I mean, this is football. These guys go to battle with each other. I don't like to use the word war because it diminishes war in the context of our veterans and our active military personnel. But they go out there and commit acts of violence against one another every Sunday for 60 minutes. It is an extraordinarily emotional thing. And when you're going to battle or war in that context, sports context, and committing violence against one another, having violence committed against you, you're not thinking about proper grammar. And you're not thinking about new words to replace profanity-laced words because you're concerned with somebody that might hear it. When you are in your own element in a game of violence and in a locker room after that violence has just been completed and you're emotional, you're not thinking about, hiding profanity. You're just among the fellas and you're allowed to swear. You're allowed to curse. So that part of it is not a story to me. What some people are making a story is the idea that he called the Patriots a-holes. And some are trying to make that out to be, well, Bill Belichick and the Patriots are hated throughout the league. Bill Belichick and the Patriots, they were found guilty of Spygate. Bill Belichick and the Patriots, Tom Brady was suspended for Deflategate. Bill Belichick and the Patriots, nobody likes them. They are a-holes. And Mike Tomlin called them a-holes for being a-holes. And the truth of the matter is, I don't think Mike Tomlin was thinking the Patriots are a-holes. Mike Tomlin is saying that everybody is an a-hole. Anybody we're playing now, if they played yesterday, we spotted them a-holes a day and a half of preparation. But you know what? It doesn't matter. We're still going to get after that A, which is what he said. It's not a term of, boy, Mike Tomlin sure doesn't like the Patriots. He called them a-holes. And that's how they're trying to spin it up in New England as well. And it's just not true. And a lot of national talk show hosts are using it that way as well, and that just bothers me. I want them to take the context here, put this into context. When and where, time and place. Time immediately after a win over the Chiefs to go to the AFC Championship game for a right to go to the Super Bowl. Place, the privacy of the locker room at a closed door time when the media is not allowed in. Calling somebody an a-hole in that case isn't considering, all right, who are we playing next? Oh, it's the Patriots, those a-holes. They could have been playing the Cincinnati Bengals next week. They could have been playing the Miami Dolphins next week. They could have been playing the Denver Broncos next week. And it doesn't matter. He would have said, we spotted those a-holes a day and a half. His point was about the fact that the other team had more rest and prep time than they have to play the next game. That's what makes them a-holes, the fact that they're the opponents, not that they're the Patriots. And I think it's important to point that out. Now more from the 47 seconds of shame from Antonio Brown.
Keep it low profile. Let's get ready to ball up this up again here in a few days and be right back at it.
Let's go.
Hey, man. This is our story.
Be cool on social media. This is about us, nobody else. And of course, there's Antonio Brown on social media embarrassing himself and his franchise, and quite frankly, embarrassing his head coach. Which brings us back to a couple of things. One, I want you to hear, I played some of this in the first hour, but if you missed it, since you just turned on the radio, I want you to hear Mike Tomlin's press conference today speaking about this issue, and speaking about it very directly, and in my opinion, very eloquently, and in my opinion, in about as straightforward and direct of a manner as any coach could possibly do it, given the fact that his player has just embarrassed him. Don't think for 1 second. Don't think that there isn't some real embarrassment for Mike Tomlin here that he won't tell you about because one of his players felt so comfortable violating such a sacred rule as privacy of the locker room when the doors are closed because he felt like he could. That's embarrassing for a head coach. And if you don't agree, like I said, listen to Tom Brady talk about what life would be like in New England if anybody ever tried to pull that on Bill Belichick. It is embarrassing. And it speaks poorly of the coach's handle on his team, his discipline on his team, the respect he gets from his team. If you listen to him in that motivational post-game pep talk, by the way, you hear a guy who sounds like a player. Does he not? Does Mike Tomlin not sound like a guy who's just took off the shoulder pads himself? He is a very, very well-liked player's coach, and they love that about him. But sometimes the downfall of that is, as a player's coach, your players don't see you as a coach. They see you as another player. And if they see you as another player and not as a coach, well, they can pretty much do whatever they want. You're just another dude. You're just another guy in the locker room yelling and screaming and cheering and all that. And that's the line you walk. And that's the line Mike Tomlin had to kind of deal with here, as Antonio Brown did that embarrassing display on Sunday night. And now he's got to talk about it at the Tuesday afternoon press conference.
Now I'll start with the elephant in the room. I want to talk to you about the post-game video. And I want to talk about it in really kind of three specific areas. First, the content of the video. I'd like to say that the language on the video is regrettable, language by me and by others. And it's regrettable because, man, this thing that is the National Football League, this platform that we have, is a precious and awesome thing, and not something that we take very lightly. The responsibility associated with being in this thing, you know, just from a role model standpoint, is something that I personally embrace, is something that we as a team and organization embraces. And so that's why the language specifically in terms of the content is regrettable. That's why we go to great lengths to preserve certain moments and certain interactions between us, because we are very sensitive to the opportunity that we have as role models. So I apologize for the content of the video from that perspective. As a parent, as a member of a community, I take that very seriously, and so I sincerely issue an apology in that regard.
And I'll say the same thing I said in hour number one about that. He's not sorry for the language. He's sorry for the fact that you heard it. Because, again, it wasn't supposed to be for anybody else's consumption except for a room full of very high testosterone football players coming off of a very emotional win and a very, very tight football game. And that's who it was intended for. So no apology should be necessary for the language. That's the nature of that beast. But the fact that you heard it is what he's apologizing for. And that falls at the feet of Antonio Brown. More on from Mike Tomlin on Antonio Brown.
In regard to the content of the video relative to its impact on this game or our preparation as a distraction and New England's motivation and so forth, I have absolutely no worries regarding. We're in the AFC Championship. You're not going to creep in the back door of New England and win a football game and creep out of there with an AFC championship. I'm not worried about our team's ability to deal with the potential distractions. We have prepared for distractions as much as we've prepared for this opportunity.
I think that is an absolutely perfect answer. And I could not agree more. You know, I mean, as it pertains to this video giving the Patriots any more motivation, are you kidding me? They're the Patriots. They're prepared to play us. They know everything about us. They know what we do. We ain't sneaking up on anybody anyway. If you don't think they're already going to be at their hype or their highest level of hype and their highest level of motivation to go back to another Super Bowl, which would be the seventh Super Bowl appearance for the Brady-Belichick combination, looking for their fifth win. You think they needed Antonio Brown broadcasting me saying, we got to give these, we already gave these a-holes a day and a half of prep time ahead of us, or we spotted them a day and a half? You think they needed that to get motivated? It has no bearing whatsoever on this game. That will have no, and he's 100% right. I want to hear the first part of that again, please.
In regard to the content of the video relative to its impact on this game or our preparation as a distraction and New England's motivation and so forth, I have absolutely no worries regarding. We're in the AFC Championship. You're not going to creep in the back door of New England and win a football game and creep out of there with an AFC Championship. I'm not worried about our team's ability to deal with the potential distractions. We have prepared for distractions as much as we've prepared for this opportunity.
So perfectly said. We are not going to creep up on them, and we're not going to creep out the back door with a victory. We're going to have to come through the front door. They know we're coming, and they're going to have to try to stop us. And if we're going to get the victory, we're going to take it from them right out the front door. Now his comments specifically to Antonio Brown, and they're not pleasant. And I'm going to say this too, by the way. As strong as the response is, It is not as strong as it would be, in my opinion, and I'll say this not just about Tomlin, but nationally. If this was a certain wide receiver for the New York Giants instead of a certain wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers. We all have been watching and following the saga of Odell Beckham Jr. and his incredible lack of maturity and all of the big distractions he has caused for the New York Giants, even though they have won, even though they made it to the playoffs and everything else. And he is having a monster start to his career and all of the rest. One of the best receivers in football, probably top five. I wouldn't go top three right now, but I would go top five. With all of that, if he had done this, he would be getting killed nationally for it. Antonio Brown deserves to be killed on an almost equal level because of the nature of this quote-unquote crime. Here's Mike Tomlin's dealing with the situation.
I'll be bluntly honest here. It was foolish of him to do that. It was selfish for him to do that. And it was inconsiderate for him to do that. Not only is it a violation of our policy, it is a violation of league policy, both of which he knows. So there are consequences to be dealt with from his perspective. We will punish him. We won't punish us. And we'll do so swiftly, and we'll do so internally. And I'll imagine that there are consequences associated with the National Football League's policy in that regard. Sure that he'll appropriately absorb all of those things.
So he'll absorb a fine from us, and he'll absorb a fine from the National Football League, but we will not punish us. We won't punish ourselves by benching or suspending our best offensive playmaker, not named Le'Veon Bell. We're not going to punish ourselves by taking the NFL's receptions leader and sitting him in the AFC Championship game when we have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. We won't punish us.
So there are consequences to be dealt with from his perspective. We will punish him. We won't punish us.
That makes sense to me. I really, really appreciate that part of what Mike Tomlin had to say. And the last piece that I want to play before I hear from you at 866-240-1065. Mike Tomlin at the presser today addressing a national issue with Antonio Brown.
He's got to grow from this. He has to. He works extremely hard. He's extremely talented. And those things get minimized with incidences such as this. You wear on your teammates when they have to routinely answer questions about things that aren't preparation or football related. It's our desire for him and everyone to be great teammates as well as great players. He's a great player. He's a hard-working player. He's respected largely in the locker room for those things. But incidences such as this, you know, don't help him in that regard, and that's just the reality of it.
So what I want to know from you as we go to your phone calls after the Sports Center here is this. Do you think that Antonio Brown should be punished in any measurable way beyond a fine? And second of all, can you relate at all? I mean, this is 2017. Can you relate because of all of the different ways people can embarrass themselves today compared to the way it was? I mean, let's just say, for example, that Antonio Brown is a star receiver on the 1978 Pittsburgh Steelers. And he, you know, that's a Super Bowl championship team, one of their four at that time. Let's suppose he's playing back then with Swanee and Stallworth and the rest of those guys, right? And he pulls something embarrassing, and maybe he has an old cassette recorder. I'm trying to find a way here. You understand my point. And he finds a way to somehow leak out to the media what Coach Chuck Knoll said in the locker room. Chances are it goes about no further than whichever writer heard it, and maybe there's an article in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette about it, and that's it. That's it. And the chances are that that wouldn't even happen, because again, you know, if you're a 24, 25, 26, 27-year-old kid playing, when I say kid in the context of football, you know, not a 30-some-year-old grizzled veteran, but if you're a youngster playing any professional sport and you have money and celebrity back in those days, in the 60s, 70s, and even in the 80s, if you do something stupid, the chances are very good that the only people who know you did something stupid are yourself and the guy you did it in front of. Right? But because of today, because of smartphones, because of the internet, because of social media sites, because of instant live streaming capabilities, because of Facebook Live, because of Periscope on Twitter, et cetera, Instagram house parties or live parties, whatever those are, you can stream live on that too. But because all of that stuff is so readily available to the 20-some-year-olds today, now when you do something wrong, it's not just you and the guy you did it in front of who know about it. The world knows about it in two clicks. Can you relate it all to what Antonio Brown did there? Do you have any room for sympathy there? Do you have any room for, hey, it's a young, dumb mistake. He probably didn't even know the microphone was picking up Tomlin. He was just whispering so nobody could hear, so the Tomlin wouldn't hear him screwing around with the phone on the other side of the lockers. Is there anybody, I guess is what I'm going to say, is who will defend Antonio Brown? And if you try, let me ask you, do you think you would get such defense in your job? If you turned on your live stream in the middle of a conference call or a conference, a meeting in a conference room, I should say, at your place of work, and the boss was live streamed, saying curse words and, maybe denigrating the competition in whatever business you're in, can you imagine anybody else getting away with it? So there's a couple of different angles that I'd love your thoughts on. 866-240-1065. Right back with you on the Extravaganza.
Be part of the Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Rolling indeed, along are we. Any thoughts that you might have on the Antonio Brown situation and whether or not Mike Tomlin handled it right? He said basically they're going to be fining him. He didn't say the word fine. He said we will punish him, not us. Meaning we're not going to lose our best player over this for the AFC Championship game. But we are going to make sure he feels the pain. And then also from the league, because he broke league rules too, they'll probably punish him as well. And I think that's going to be financial in both cases. Chances are it won't be enough to really, justify the situation, because league fines and team fines are usually just pennies on the dollar to what these guys make. It's not going to be the equivalent even of a game check or anything like that, I wouldn't imagine. So it won't be much punishment, but will it be enough punishment to fit the crime? How do you feel about it? If you have thoughts on it, we'll take them at 866-240-1065. Kush, you've been listening to all of this. You heard Mike Tomlin directly. Your thoughts on whether or not Tomlin is handling this right, and your thoughts just on the ignorance of a player like Antonio Brown, one of the elite offensive weapons in the league, a multi-time All-Pro already in his young career, the pride, by the way, of the Mid-American Conference. You do something as stupid as this when you're as high-profile a player as he is. There's got to be some consequences, but as Tomlin said, we don't want to hurt our team over it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation from that standpoint, because you heard the sureness in Tomlin's voice in some of those clips we've been playing, that he definitely wants to do something to let Brown know that, this was wrong and he totally shouldn't have done this. But at the same time, you're right. He doesn't want to have to lose his best player. So I think you're only going to see some various fines out of it. Or if they put in some suspension, it'll be similar to like that time long ago when Roberto Alomar spit in the umpire's face, but the suspension didn't take effect till the next season, not for the playoffs that were about to happen. The same thing.
Which was very different, by the way. That's a little different, too, because true. What he did there was a direct offense at the game,
right?
And at baseball,
right.
The baseball employee being the umpire.
Yes.
And in this case, he didn't really do anything to hurt anybody except his own team, his own self,
right.
His own head coach. So the league probably wouldn't be suspending him anyway here.
At
the most, this is a fine situation, because he only hurt himself and his team. He didn't hurt the league, or he didn't hurt the officiating crew or anything like that.
I understand that. I'm just trying to compare that. If the Steelers internally decide that they do want to do some kind of suspension, I guarantee, and I don't think they will, guaranteeing you said suspension will be for week one of the 2017 season. Similar to that,
yeah.
Roberto, that's why I threw the comparison out there. The other thing that I found interesting, this is something you brought up, Bob, in the first hour, and you, of all people, are in a unique position to confirm or deny this based on past ages when you were working sideline reporters, you often mentioned, for the Raiders, around your circa 2000?
2000, 2001, 2002, yeah.
Arrowhead locker room has always been like that because it's one of the older stadiums. You mentioned how a lot of locker rooms today, they're all along the walls, almost in a circle.
Yeah, it's
kind
almost
of thing.
It's just a wide open. It's an open, what's called an
right.
open locker room, where you don't have rows of lockers. It's just everything is on a wall, so that the middle is all wide open.
Yeah, and it's a small silly tidbit in this, but you're right. The Arrowhead locker room, being as old as it is kind of constructed in that older way. That's why there's a little nook that Antonio Brown could basically be doing this, because you're right. In most other locker rooms, at some point Tomlin would have at least seen him screwing around on something and would have said something possibly right then and there.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, he wouldn't even have done it.
Right, that's it.
You know, he wouldn't even have tried it. I truly don't believe he would have even tried it had Coach Tomlin been able to see him, you know, within line of sight. If he's holding up a phone while Coach is talking,
yeah.
Coach can look over there and say, what the hell is the matter with you?
Something to that effect, yeah.
Yeah.
Point is, he would have been seen, but given the actual construction layout of the old Arrowhead locker rooms, which I imagine were the same kind of layout back in 2000, 2001, 2002, for example, that lends to this. It's just one of those, you know, silly quirks in the whole thing, because I think you're right. This probably wouldn't have happened if they were in some kind of stadium that was built in the last 10 years, because they don't build locker rooms like that anymore.
Right. That's very, very true. So obviously it's a very unique situation that Tomlin finds himself in, as he has to, you know, figure out a way to discipline his player. And also, I talked about this before, too. Do you think this has a negative impact on Mike Tomlin's reputation? Not because he was caught swearing, which is the biggest non-story of this entire event. It really is a non-story. I think he was right when he said, look, I'm sorry that anybody heard it, because you weren't supposed to hear it. And he said, I'm sorry for any parents whose kids may have heard some language that they shouldn't have. But he's not apologizing for swearing, because it doesn't deserve an apology.
You know what's interesting? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But he also said, this is a non-factor from a motivational standpoint for the Patriots. It's a non-issue that I called them a-holes. And he's right about that, too.
Yep.
He said it's not going to impact how they prepare or we prepare or play this game. But what it does do, at least in my question to you, is do you think it does have a negative impact on his reputation because his players don't respect him enough to at least keep the veil of privacy over their closed-door sessions after football games before the media is allowed in, that somebody would violate their privacy in such a way and really kind of say, you know what, we do what we want around here. Antonio Brown, for all intents and purposes, said, you know, we don't have any rules.
Yeah.
We can do whatever we want. You know, Mike is one of us. Coach Tomlin is like a player. He's like a brother, not an authority figure. And a lot of people like players, coaches. I said before, I do, and I know a lot of players certainly do. But if you are such a buddy-buddy, you know, kind of a coach with the fellow players that they just see you as one of the brotherhood rather than the dad, overlooking the brothers, you know, overseeing and being the authority figure over them, if so much so that you can do whatever you want when he's talking, and you can ignore him and tune him out and just go over there and play with your phone and do this, I wonder what kind of an impact it has on Mike Tomlin's reputation as being a guy who can command the respect of his locker room without being the buddy-buddy.
Now, the Mike Tomlin question, specific part of it, is something that I think will have to be delved into a little more. I'm not 100% sure, as I'm trying to think about this, what it says about him, because what I can't get past is something that it does speak it broadly. And even though you said a moment ago that you kind of like them, this shows one of the pitfalls of being the quote-unquote player's coach, that maybe some of your guys, especially the more star ones, think the rules don't apply to them and act accordingly. If there's any one thing to me, it's not specifically Tomlin, more as the concept of the player's coach. Now, I'm not here advocating that everyone, and you referenced this name last hour too, I'm not here advocating that, oh, every head coach and manager in sports needs to be a, one of those old school disciplinarian types, one of those Bobby Knight type guys.
For,
yeah, I'm not suggesting necessarily that, but this is an interesting inside look into one of the pitfalls of what being a quote-unquote player's coach is, that sometimes you're going to have players that act like this, and it probably happens more than we think, but they're not, you know, live-streaming post-game head coach speeches to players. Another thing, by the way, that shows you, because I know there's probably some people out there thinking, well, what's the difference? You know, they've had, you know, media people that we've seen the pictures of some of after wins, sometimes coaches having to talk to them. No, that's the cleaned up version. What you saw in this video from Antonio Brown, that's the unedited, that's the uncensored version before they bring the cameras in and shorten that speech and clean it up for the cameras. So I just want to throw that out to everybody too.
Yeah, and let me throw this at you. It took time to underscore that point about the player's coach kind of, you know, the gamble that you take while being the buddy with the guys when it's time to be the authority figure over the guys and have them respect you. Here is a response from this afternoon from Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman takes a dig at Mike Tomlin here, not for the a-holes comment, but for the whole thing that went down. Patriots, well, this is from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. New England Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman has some takes on the Antonio Brown controversy, and they're not sympathetic to his rival receiver in Pittsburgh. Speaking on Sports Radio WEEI in Boston, Edelman said the Facebook Live incident would never happen in the Patriots locker room. He said, quote, "Hey, people got different rules, and that's how that team's run. I personally don't think that would be something that would happen in our locker room, but hey, whatever. Some people like red, some people like blue. Some people like tulips, some people like roses. Whatever. I personally wouldn't do that, so let's just say that. And I would be more worried about just kind of celebrating with my teammates and keeping it internal." The line there that says exactly what I meant about the reputation of Tomlin taking a hit here is, that's how that team's run. He's saying, that's how that team is run. Loosey-goosey. All of the rules are out the window, or they're just suggestions. Guys can do what they want because that coach doesn't have a firm grip of authority on his players. That's essentially what he is saying here, that it's how it's run under Tomlin. That's a dig at Mike Tomlin. And interestingly enough, it comes at a time when, you know, Mike Tomlin's coaching credentials have been called into question by no less an authority than four-time Super Bowl Pittsburgh Steelers, a Super Bowl champion, Steelers quarterback legend, Terry Bradshaw, who 2 weeks ago, interview on Fox Sports, I believe it was,
yes,
said that Mike Tomlin is not a great coach. He's more of a cheerleader guy. Now, that drew the wrath of a lot of people who said he's not a great coach. He's more of a cheerleader. Because that, to me, impugns, and I get it, it impugns his X's and O's capabilities, which is something that's pretty insulting, saying he's a cheerleader. He clarified, Bradshaw did, about 4 days ago. He said, "I shouldn't have said cheerleader. What I meant to say was he's a motivator. He's a guy who gets his guys jacked up. He motivates them. But he's not a great coach in this in the sense of running a team." Okay, well, he may have clarified part of that, which is good enough for me. I knew what he meant by cheerleader already, but some didn't. And if he says motivator, and that means a little bit, you know, it's a little bit less offensive, then that's fine. But the truth of the matter is, he is still saying that he's not necessarily a great coach in that he doesn't really have a great handle on his team. And you know what? This example underscores that. It doesn't help dilute that at all. Or diminish that. It basically says, yeah, look at this. Can you imagine anybody else doing this for on another team with a coach that is a true authority figure? And the answer is no. So, you know, here's Julian Edelman lending credence to that, that Mike Tomlin, well, he runs a pretty loose ship over there. That's how that team is run. And that, to me, says something when you have the other players in other cities, including the team that was talked about here, the upcoming opponent, feels strong enough to weigh in on it that way.
Yeah, And I guess there is some level, obviously, that, you know, has to reflect on Tomlin. Again, not anything he said in the video. In fact, in a twisted way, I'm kind of glad we got to see uncensored coaches in locker rooms after game. I'm just going to go out there and go ahead and say that because I have no problem
with what Tomlin specifically said. I'm going to tell you something. Again, having been in a lot of those locker rooms, that was uncensored, but that was mild.
I totally believe that.
I'm telling you, I have heard so much more graphic language from coaches and players after wins. That was tame.
Yeah.
I've heard guys, coming into the locker room after they closed that door, man, we effed that S up. You know, I mean, I'm talking about just hype. Pumped up.
Use your imagination, people.
Oh, my God, yeah. So what you heard there, while it was unedited, you're right, it wasn't even bad. I mean, people, if they think that's the, oh, my goodness, I'm terribly offended at that kind of language in the NFL locker room. Man, you haven't heard anything.
That I'm with you on. at the same time, again, I guess there is some level, and this gets back to kind of what I'm saying in general about one of the possible pitfalls of being a quote-unquote player's coach. Yes, on some level, part of this has to be looked at by, you know, people in the Steelers organization. I'm not saying that they need to fire Tomlin or anything silly like that. That's complete stupid overkill, and I'd be shocked if an organization like the Steelers would do that.
No, in fact, just the opposite.
Yeah.
Mike Tomlin is being viewed, correctly so, as the victim here. His privacy was invaded here by his own player. He was the one who was set up here in a bad way. Probably not intentional.
No, it wasn't. I don't think any of this was intentional. I think Antonio Brown was just being silly and trying to have some fun in his own way after him.
Yeah, exactly. Not knowing that the mic was picking up everything Tomlin was saying and he was broadcasting all of that to the world.
Because quite frankly, if Antonio Brown was trying to intentionally mess with Mike Tomlin, then man, there's some problems on the Steelers we don't know about.
Well, not only that, but I mean, just from a logistics standpoint, if he was really trying to do that, he would have gotten a lot closer with that microphone. Yep. We could have heard it a lot more clearly.
Right.
You know, he was obviously hiding away, trying to just kind of put on a show for his viewers on his Facebook Live, you know, broadcast.
There's a couple of teammates that happened to be right there, some of which you saw on the video. But again, I'm not suggesting anybody in the Steelers organization would do anything that rash. They're too credible of an organization to do something that rash. That being said, that kind of thing might make them want to keep an extra eye on how things internally, you know, are handled in the sense of what the players under their control are able to get away with and not. If you follow what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I do. I do. And here's another viewpoint, by the way, just because, you know, I've been kind of hard on Antonio Brown for all this and calling him. And I think it's deserved. Like I said, if it was Odell Beckham, I think a lot more people would be even harsher on him than they are
Brown. Yeah, I got to agree with that.
And that's because he's built a reputation for himself as a diva and as a troublemaker and a distraction for his team and so on and so forth. So much so that his own quarterback has had to call him out on some things. And it's bad. So I've been hard on Brown, but here's another look at it. And I gave you the Julian Edelman side from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Here's another writer from Pittsburgh, Ron Cook, who is describing the situation this way. Quote, "I got mad at Antonio Brown when he took excessive celebration penalties against Washington, Kansas City, and Indianapolis. And he was nearly thrown out of the New York Jets game for wearing cleats honoring Muhammad Ali against the league rules. Then he jogged back to the line of scrimmage against Miami when the Steelers were in a 2-minute offense because he was unhappy the ball didn't come to him. And when he showed up, Landry Jones and even Ben Roethlisberger on the field. It's time for Antonio Brown to grow up," read the headline on my column after his late game petulance against the Dolphins. "But I can't be mad at Brown for this 17 and a half minute Facebook Live video, no matter how hard I try. The Steelers had just beaten the AFC's number 2 seed on the road, becoming the first team in NFL postseason history to win when the opponent scored 2 more touchdowns than they did, ending a 0-245 streak, according to NFL Live." We talked about that yesterday. "Brown had made the play to clinch the win, catching a 7-yard pass on 3rd-and-3 from the Steelers' 12 with 2 minutes left, enabling Roethlisberger to take 3 knees to run out the clock. The Steelers were on to New England for the AFC Championship game. Brown wanted to celebrate. So did many of his teammates. Brown captured it all on his iPhone. Welcome to social media 2017. And, Jim, this is what I meant earlier when I talked about the difference between the 70s and the 80s and now. Was the video silly and unnecessary, writes Cook? Absolutely. But hurtful in any way? I don't think so. Much of it was nothing more than Brown with a ridiculous smile. If you watch it enough, it'll make you laugh. I watched the parts of it several times and didn't see the same narcissistic look at me player that I did when Brown was twerking and humping earlier on in the season and hurting his team. I saw a guy having the time of his life. Did it violate locker room sanctity? Yes, I guess, but is there such sanctity anymore? The NFL encourages more, and this is true, the NFL encourages more and more access to its coaches and players. The networks and NFL films are given total access, and their cameras and microphones are on the field during games and in locker rooms before and after games. And, Jim, I'll add to his column here and talk about Hard Knocks. They want to provide people with the look inside.
That's true. Good call.
Unvarnished, unedited, etc. They want that. So can we truly be that outraged when somebody provides an unvarnished, unedited look inside just the way the Hard Knocks cameras do?
Good call.
So I want to be fair while I'm ripping Brown for all of this and embarrassing his coach. I also want to say there is another side to the story. Hey, I hear the music playing, and you know what? That's good. Let the music celebrate what I'm about to do for you. The Tickets Sweet Deal of the Week is back. And this week, The sweet deal is a family four-pack of tickets, gift certificate anyway, family four-pack gift certificate to Splash Universe in Dunee. Log on to 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to get the Splash Universe gift certificates, which are valued at $130 for just $35. That's basically 75% off. But you can also get it for 100% off right now. Be caller number 888-660-240-1065, and we'll hook you up with a freebie. Your family four-pack gift certificate to Splash Universe in Dundee. You do that now. Make Jim Cushlin answer the phone before he takes over for Mike Miller on Drive Time. Coming up next right here on the team.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.